6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, and so forth. My name is Dan. I'm here with another man named Dan. How are you doing, Dan?
I am doing well, as Dans usually are at this time on Wednesday specifically, when two of us from the group of Dans in the world stream this podcast. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing pretty good. Because we have some fun things to talk about today.
Yes.
Dan, yo, we have seen the next season of The Wheel of Time. The Wheel of Time season 3 comes out, I believe, tonight, late tonight, or early tomorrow morning. And you've watched all 8 episodes. I've watched 7 out of 8. I watched the finale tonight.
Yes.
And I think we owe people here an early review. What did we think? What did we like? What do we not like? Spoiler free, of course.
Yes.
Will the season make fans angry, happy, sad, joyous? Will it make them want to dance, make them want to scream? What can we offer? So I'll start with a simple question. Dan, what did you think of the 3rd season of The Wheel of Time, which you have seen in its entirety early, thanks to the wonderful people at Prime Video?
Yes. So hello to everybody in the chat. I see a bunch of people saying a bunch of nice stuff. Great to see you all there. And yeah, I think we're about 12 hours. Anamander Rake says less than 12 hours. It premieres at, I believe, midnight Pacific time. So that's 3 a.m. for East Coast people. I really enjoyed this season of The Wheel of Time. I think it is the strongest season of the show. By not even a little bit, by a lot. I think the show stepped up in just about every way this season. I think people who are both book fans and show watchers only, I think they'll probably all really enjoy this season. I have a few thoughts, but I'm sure you probably remember this, Dan. When season 2 came out, they only showed us the first 4 episodes early. And you kind of asked me back then, like, what did you think of them? And I was kind of hesitant because season 2 made a lot of really bold choices just out of the gate. And I don't have those feelings with season 3. I think this is a really good season of television and it's a good adaptation. But you've seen 7 out of 8 of the episodes. You've seen everything but the finale. What did you enjoy it? What did you think of this season?
Also point out that I remember when you saw season two early and then I asked you how it was and you were like, it's a little iffy. Remember, I saw it and I was like, what is he talking about? This is pretty good.
Yeah. And I like those episodes more in retrospect. I was just torn on them at first.
Gotcha. And I can also say, and just people, Daniel is a lover, not a fighter. He loves things. I hate things. So I want you know what I mean when I say that I've really enjoyed it quite a lot. The first season of Wheel of Time show, I liked it. It was a little bit rough on its feet. Second season was better. The third season runs with that momentum. You can tell there's a level of confidence that was kind of getting up and running by season two, and it's fully engaged here. It is based on the book The Shadow Rising by Robert Jordan, and a ton of that shows up. Yes. I felt like I was watching a Wheel of Time adaptation. I liked the characters more this time around. I don't know quite what it is. I think the first two seasons, the Wheel of Time, the characters are prototypes in some way. It took, I didn't like spark to them when I was reading the books. Like I have some other books, things that I've loved for whatever reason. I feel like I was more into it this time. Yeah. I have more sympathy for them. I think the season plays with tones better. Like I'm not looking for the season to be the show to be a laugh out loud riot, but I thought there were moments that were lighter and fun and kind of luxuriate in different tones they play with that I liked a lot. We know in The Shadow Rising, this isn't a spoiler, the characters, you know, Rand and Perrin and Matt and Egwene and Nynaeve all kind of go to different places, which is a little Game of Thrones-esque in the way they're all spread out. This season accurately represents that. We're all spread all over the map. Every place feels different. Every adventure feels different.
Totally.
And they all have their own identity, and I like that. There are, I hope this isn't a spoiler, there are two episodes that kind of take place in more or less one location.
No, we know that,
that's something that it takes confidence to be able to do, to like say, we like this so much, we're going to take time to do it. And those are two of the best ones, by the way, in my opinion. And you can tell that they just liked it. You can tell, especially in those two episodes where they're all in one location, that they really wanted to take the time and flesh it out and let it rest and let it sit and make it an enveloping viewing experience. And I succeeded, especially the fourth one was quite transporting. But yeah, I've been enjoying the entire thing, and I have one to go. I have for the finale is controversial, but I have one left. I'll watch tonight, and we'll see if my attitude changes.
Yeah, I'm so curious. I'm curious to see what you think of the finale, and I'm curious to see what viewers think of it, you know, fans, especially fans of the book series. But we've got a long road to get there for most viewers, because the finale airs April 17th. The first three episodes all drop tonight at midnight Pacific time, which this season more than any other. So you are right. I'm a lover, not a hater when it comes to my media. When I really dislike things, I tend to just not want to give them my time. I don't really like hate watching things over much, but even that aside, I really enjoyed this season. I liked what you said about how you could see the shadow rising in it. I think that is totally true here to a greater extent than the previous two seasons, where you could see some elements of each of the books, but they also very much did their own thing at times. There are still parts of this that are, you know, the show doing its own thing a little bit, but for the most part, like, this is very recognizably the book.
Totally.
And a lot of the stuff that is not directly from The Shadow Rising is from other books. I recognize stuff from The Dragon Reborn, which is the third book. I recognize some plot points from The Fires of Heaven that it's kind of setting up, which is the fifth book. So, yeah, I think this season is going to really please fans of the series. And, yeah, I agree with you about especially the almost kind of more standalone episodes. This has been known for a while, so this is not a spoiler, that episodes 4 and 7 take place pretty much entirely in one location. 4 specifically is, for the bookish peeps, is Ruidian. We can say that. It's been talked about at length. I think that is probably the best episode of the show, if probably. At least one of the best episodes. But for me, my previous favorite was Egwene's episode last season where she's tortured by the Seanchan. I think this one I liked even more. It's close, but I really liked this episode. So yeah, I can't wait to see what people think. I loved, one thing I loved about this season is the locations.
They're fun.
I think the Wheel of Time has, like, they clearly go to beautiful places and film there. And that's just such a refreshing, like, breath of fresh air from, like, not to shade, like, I love me some House of the Dragon. But that's always been one thing that I felt was, like, missing from House of the Dragon a little bit, that Thrones had, was, like, you know, taking viewers on a fantasy globe-spanning journey, kind of. House of the Dragon's not that kind of story. And I don't think any other fantasy show has done that as well since Game of Thrones as the Wheel of Time is doing it this season. So I hope people like it.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.
This season has a pleasant sense of sprawl that I want to call Game of Thrones-esque, even though it was out before Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I wanted to say two things. I said I like the characters more.
Yeah.
Which I do, because I feel like they're just more kind of confident and they have a better handle of writing them and playing them. Matt totally. Is a highlight. I feel like Matt has sort of gotten shafted a bit, not really for any reason that are anybody's fault. The first season was setting everybody up. Then the actor had to leave, and the second season had to find someone new to do with him. And it felt like he really finally emerged as the scene stealer he should be. Because you want that character, right? You want the sassy one-liner, kind of irrepressible, slightly irresponsible wild card character in your group. Yes. And for one reason or another, they've never really been able to have it, because the first season had a different actor, and the second season they had to kind of rework his plot. And the third season, it's like, oh, he's finally here, finally. Like the one who's kind of sassy and making the quips and lightening the mood. And it kind of added a new level to other scenes. Matt was great. And like, it finally felt like, I'm not saying he wasn't there before, but it felt like he really showed up this time, which I liked. Yeah, I also want to say,
totally agree with that.
The production values. Damn. I mean, we talk about episode or seasons not having enough episodes, and I think that's true. We talk about shows being in a bubble, but I will say, whatever the concerns of A Wheel of Time, they clearly gave him a bunch of money for this season, because the episodes are A, very long. Like, there are only eight, but they are chonky people or chonky episodes. And B, they look great. The show always looked pretty good. And I mean, in the first season, there was some rough stuff because of COVID. Again, it was sort of screwed over, the show, in the first season a bit.
It was.
It looks terrific here. Those first 11 minutes where they, which were put up online, where the Aes Sedai kind of battle in the tower. It just looks fantastic. It looks bright and colorful and dangerous and exciting. And there's a lot of that. That fourth episode in Ruidian, I kind of might compare it to a Game of Thrones episode like The Door, where they go back in time to Hodor's memories. They do a great job of mixing in these flashbacks, these visions. And I'm saying this isn't a spoiler, because if you've read The Shadow Rising, you know what to expect. And doing it in a way that takes its time and is drawn out and is very lovingly put together and very evocative. And in terms of using like wide angle lenses and the sound mixing and like slow motion effects in a way that just is something I don't feel like I've seen. It feels like something out of The Wheel of Time. I can't really compare it to much else. I compared it to The Door just now from Game of Thrones, but still, that was incidental. I love that one. That was a great one.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it does, you know, that is a very, very famous scene from the books. I am so happy for the show that it has finally been able to do that scene,
totally,
as well
it.
As so many others, and do them really well. And I do think the production values are, you know, I know that like Rafe Judkins, the showrunner, has kind of talked about how they don't have as much money as some of the other big fantasy shows. Part of me has always felt like that is just, like, maybe that's true, but it's also partially because Amazon is literally like dumping truckloads of money at the Rings of Power, so it feels that way more than it actually is, because it clearly has a good budget this season. The show looks great. I think every single department, costuming, the special effects, the stunts are better, which is something that I haven't always loved the stunts on The Wheel of Time. They're good, but like, that is one thing I will give like The Witcher over The Wheel of Time. I think The Witcher has had really, really good fight scenes. The Wheel of Time's fight scenes are the best they've ever been this season. And the actors, what you said about the characters feeling more like themselves, about the production feeling more like it is, you know, comfortable with the characters, Matt especially. I've said that in like every time I've written, you know, review material for this, because we will be reviewing these episodes. I reviewed the whole season earlier this week. That's something I keep coming back to, is like, it felt like last season, Donal Finn, who played Matt, was kind of finding his footing. The show is kind of finding its footing with him. This season, this is the Matt we all know and love and have been waiting for. Kind of the same with Perrin and Rand, honestly. Like,
I agree. Yeah.
It was a good season for especially the Two Rivers guys. But, you know, most characters get really good seasons. And I agree with Rapunzel 347. Emmy for Sharon Gillum. Yeah. I think she's doing ridiculously cool work with the costuming on this show.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's nice seeing, I assume that's the costume designer.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's nice. You can see that they really go hog wild with reason in the White Tower. Like, and you have queens and sorceresses all rounding up, and you just tell a costume designer, like, make crazy, powerful, fantasy costumes. Ooh, yes. It's License to Kill, and they kill.
Yes.
What else was I going to say? Yeah, you're right. Ran, Matt, and Perrin all stand out. Okay, I talk about this too. This is the first season of The Wheel of Time that feels like it's really Rand-centric.
Yes, it is.
The last two seasons, he's obviously an important character. They chose to kind of ground Moiraine a bit more. And I don't think it's a bad choice. I like Moiraine. I love Rosamund Pike. And again, I really hope the show gets to continue because it's exciting watching it kind of shift and change a little bit as it goes. This season does drill down more on Rand and Perrin, especially. They feel like they come to the forefront in a way that is accurate to the books and doesn't feel.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever felt bad that they were focusing on Moiraine. I know they were expanding their character from the books. I liked what I saw, so I wasn't pissed about it. But I did think eventually you've got to really get to Rand because he's going to be the one who carries this over the finish line for the long haul. And this season felt like they were really doing that. They were really drilling down on him and Joshua Swarovski's performance and making us see him as the central figure, which he is. And now it's a little more in line with what I think people expect.
Yeah, totally. Joshua Swarovski, this is a huge season for him. I think his acting, there were a lot of recognizable things from like Joshua Swarovski has read all the books. So like there are like character personality quirks of Rand, or like he has kind of this like thousand mile stare where he's like, you know, it feels like Rand is starting to go mad. Like other characters observe this in Rand and Joshua Swarovski, he nails that this season, I think, as well as a few other elements of Rand's kind of personality. I think what you said about earlier seasons kind of focusing on Moiraine and maybe the ensemble a bit. I never minded that either. I always liked the balance, but I do agree that at some point the show had to put Rand front and center and say, here's our, you know, here's the guy this whole thing hinges on. Everyone's important, but it all falls apart without Rand in the mix. I think this season really nailed that. There's an interesting question in the chat I want to ask you, Dan. So Go Sedai says, have seen some reviews mentioning that the show didn't cover as much of the story from the books as might have been expected. Like it takes more time and space for characters. Your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this?
Good question, Daniel. Good question. Commenter. What was her name? Oh, sorry. Go Sedai. I haven't seen the entire thing. I'm still to watch the finale, which I do think could be a crucial one to watch.
Yes.
But agree. I'm sitting here, I've read the first four books, and I'm watching season three of The Wheel of Time, and it's fitting a ton in. I do think there are parts where it feels a bit compressed. I think of one moment in near the start involving Elaine, and then a moment in the Aiel Waste later involving a new character I won't mention for viewers spoiling people. I think it could stand to have one other hour, but I don't really think it's at least having watched the 7 out of 8, I don't feel like it's really lost much of the important plot. I mean, all the big things are covered. Like again, from the Shadow Rising, we know they go to Tenchiko, check. Hunt of the Black Aja, check. We know that Perrin goes to Rivers and helps out the people there, like check. We know that Rand goes to the Aiel Waste, check. We know that Moiraine wears a sun hat. That's a new one, but
that's the MVP of the season is Moiraine's sun hat. Every time it comes on, I'm like, there it is.
Or it'll cost Sharon Gilham her Emmy. I don't really feel like they're skimping on at least this particular book. And again, I do feel, though, that the characters are, I don't know, they're more vibrant. Like, I liked Elaine more this time. I think she has some dynamics to play that I didn't really connect with before. The one I always struggle with is Nynaeve, because I just don't think Zoe Robbins, the actor, quite embodied the name I remember from the books. But I do like some of the levels they play with her this season, too. There's a scene, I can't spoil anything, but there's a scene where like she kind of acts a bit out of character in a purposeful way that is, it's great to do that with a character. You want to get them in different contexts so they kind of put walls around who they are and what they do, which is great. They do that a lot. And also, Matt being around helps. It's so helpful to have a charming rogue character because everyone else gets to react to him. That's what you need those in your stories.
I will say, I'm assuming, and this is not you know, we've seen images, so this is not a spoiler. I'm assuming you're talking about Matt being in Tanchico when you say this.
No, I didn't really mind
you
that.
Just mean in general. I thought that was a, I like that choice more than I expected to, having watched the season.
I didn't mind it.
So one thing I do want to say about that, you know, the condensing plot lines thing. This season, I think more even than the first two, I thought all eight episodes were really, really good. I enjoyed them all a lot. There is not a dud episode in the entire season. At all. There's not even a mediocre one, like even the tiniest bit. This was a moment where I did feel almost like the show, like straining at the restrictions on it a little bit. So when I interviewed Rafe Judkins, he kind of mentioned like, we don't even have 10 episodes like Game of Thrones. We have to be really, really purposeful about what we include and what we don't, because we only have 8 episodes. And I felt that a little bit when I was watching, just that like you said, each episode is like real meaty. Like they're all about an hour or more than an hour long. And you know, in previous seasons, like the opening salvo of 3 episodes, I could easily binge and be like, that was a great binge of episodes. This season, watching all 3 in a row of the first episodes, I'm like, my God, that was a lot. They really didn't need to do this all 3 in 1 week. Like each one of these stands well enough on its own that it could have been 1 a week and people would have been totally satisfied.
Completely agree.
So I think that element of it, like I prime releasing 3 at once and then the other 5, like it's kind of madness to me a little bit that like Ruidian's next week, because Ruidian's the midpoint of the season. Like it didn't need to be. They totally could have strung out the anticipation for that more. And I think having more episodes, like this season could have benefited, because there were a few moments where it felt like things were happening a little fast, I think. And I didn't mind it because it made for good television. Like it was never bored, but there were a few moments where things were just a tiny bit compressed. So I wished it had a couple more episodes. I hope this season does really well for it and it commits. I'm not confident they'll give it 10 episode seasons like Apple did with Severance this year. But I hope they do, because I think this show and this story kind of needs and deserves it.
I agree, deserves it and needs it. I mean, look, I want more seasons, period.
Yeah, me too.
Let's be honest. Like, there's a chance this show will not be renewed. This adaptation. What? We need to be honest. of a classic beloved fantasy book series. Because they've made a few seasons and it hasn't been, I mean, it has its fans. It's good. It's watched, but it's not like an absolute smash sensation or anything. Hopefully this season bounces it up. It would be a huge shame if they put in this work and have told this much of the story to be cut off at this point, where it just keeps getting better. And look, part of the issue is if you commit to adapting something like The Wheel of Time, which part of the appeal of that is its massive size, you got to commit to adapting The Wheel of Time. And you chose the right person, you chose the right team, you chose the right actors. But Prime Video, I think the issue is they don't have their roots in the television business. Like they were a shipping company first and they are now making TV shows, and some of them hit, some of them haven't. That's why they do stupid things like release 3 episodes at once, which I agree. It seems what a dumb idea.
This like, season more than ever, it feels like a dumb idea.
Build like let word of mouth spread. Let people talk. Let people get excited. It just seems like really basic common sense to me. Let your season play out over 2 months and dominate those 2 months rather than play out over a month and a week. And all this thing you spent all this money on is over much shorter than it could be. And they might do something stupid, like commit to making a giant story like The Wheel of Time and then cancel it in the middle of it. I really hope they don't. I really hope they get to do several more seasons. I would love to see 8.
Yeah, I would love to see at least 8. I want them to be able to finish this entire story. And 8 seasons is already pushing it. Like, I always look at like the books on my shelf behind the computer mm-hmm. screen when I'm thinking about the 8 seasons, and I'm like, man, they're going to have to condense basically the back half of the series into like 2 seasons. It kind of looks like 2 to 3 seasons total. I think what you said about Amazon not having its roots in the television industry is so on point. Like, that's something I've been thinking about a lot with this season, because to me, it is clear, like, Jeff Bezos very famously mandated, like, find me the next Game of Thrones.
Sure.
And they did a bunch of shows. They dumped a bunch of money at the Rings of Power because that's a very, very recognizable brand, you know, the Lord of the Rings.
That's the only reason.
That's the only reason. It doesn't get bigger as a property than the Lord of the Rings, even if the story the Rings of Power is telling is like the C-tier, D-tier story of Tolkien's mythos. Like, it is such a D-tier story that Tolkien only wrote like 100 pages about it. Like, it wasn't even the main part of the Silmarillion. So, like, not to shade Rings of Power, I know it has its fans, but on the other end of that, you have the Wheel of Time, which is this very famous, very beloved fantasy saga that it is not having the growing pains of the Rings of Power. Yes, it had stumbling blocks, but it's also a much better production overall, I think, than the Rings of Power, despite
much
having
more consistently written, much more of a piece and coherent across seasons than Rings of Power seems.
Yes. When it is inventing storylines, when it's giving characters like, say, Alana, for example, more focus than she got in the book, it feels like they're doing that because they are very conscientious of the overall story they're telling. So, like, Alana does a very important thing in book 6. The show has made it so that when that happens, and I would be shocked if it didn't, when that happens, if it gets renewed, it will hit very, very differently. So there are all these examples of things like that where the Wheel of Time as an adaptation feels like it gets the story it's telling. Whereas the Rings of Power is like, wouldn't it be fun to have Tom Bombadil give Gandalf advice for a whole ass season? So, like, I think I've kind of rambled, but the point I was trying to make with this was, Amazon wanted its Game of Thrones, and no, the Wheel of Time does not have the same phenomenon reach as Game of Thrones at this point in its run. But I think it is the closest thing Amazon is going to get to that goal. And I think at this point, the biggest thing working against the Wheel of Time is Amazon not having its roots in the television industry. Because their TV arm is basically Jeff Bezos's pocket change. Like, it's the money he found under his couch is what they can throw at TV. It's to help drive Prime subscriptions more than it is to build their television network, you know? And I'm sure that dropping 3 episodes at once factors in there in terms of watch time and getting people to subscribe to Prime on that day instead of at a later day and all these sorts of things. So there's stuff like that where it's like that having the knowledge to think maybe the show is worth giving 10 episodes a season, because it's kind of the word of mouth of it, the cast we have for it. It is gradually becoming the flagship series for our fantasy genre stuff, whether we were betting on it originally or not. So yeah, I think I have been slow to get on the Prime do more for the Wheel of Time train, but I think at this point it's pretty clear that is like both. It's kind of the biggest obstacle the show is facing is can Prime really invest in it like a network like HBO fully got behind Game of Thrones, which is part of why it succeeded the way it succeeded. So
yes. Zach asks, will it do well enough to get more seasons? I honestly don't know.
It's hard to tell
at this point. I agree with you that Prime is the lack of understanding is an issue with the executive level. But I hope so. I think it'll get more, and I really hope it does. And I hope everyone watches so we can talk about it here. We'll keep talking about it and cross our fingers that we get the full story. Sure, go for 10 seasons. Why not if you're really into it?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts before we move on, Dan? Because we do have a couple of things to talk about.
One or two other quick thoughts. So in response to Zach, I think if season three doesn't perform well enough to get more seasons, that will be not season three's fault. Let me just say that. I think that will be kind of on Prime if it doesn't get more seasons, because I think the season of television they've produced is about as good as anyone could have hoped for. The last thing I wanted to ask you, Dan, something we didn't really talk about. There are a lot of new characters this season. Like, there are a ton. The cast like grows exponentially here. Who are some of your favorites and why?
I mean, I like listening to Shorey Agdashloo speak
so good
as Elida. Do you think her voice just sounds like that? Or did she like swallow a whole bag of Jax when she was young?
I have no idea. I mean, it sounded like that as long as I've known her as an actress, which is like many years at this point. So who
whatever
knows?
It is great.
Yeah, it has worked out in her favor, whatever the reason.
Disney the Aiel Waste are really cool. The wise yeah. ones, we meet all of them. Those are the ones that I'm thinking of. A lot of new characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the most of them I've known.
Yeah. So Elida's the standout for me too. I thought she was really excellent. I also love Bear, who's played by Jaime Lannister. Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
Oh, yeah.
It's his real life wife plays the wise one Bear, Nukaka Coster-Waldau. Thought she was great. There are some characters who haven't been officially announced yet that I really liked. I also thought Lord Gabriel's pretty good. And we don't see a ton of Morghese as Olivia Williams as Morghese, but she's another performance I thought was excellent. I want to see a lot more of Morghese.
Lane's brothers both stand out.
Yeah,
there are no small parts. There are only small actors, something like that, whatever. Everyone pops the way they should. Confident, fun, good watching. I hope everybody watches it. I agree with Rapunzel 347. We'll do what we can with our tiny platform to share it, because I think it deserves to get seen.
Yes, totally agree. And we may not kidnap any family, but my wife and I, we did get her mom watching The Wheel of Time this week.
Yeah, cool.
So she is into it. We're doing our best to, if not kidnap family members, indoctrinate them.
It's a militant language there.
Hey, this is... We need to do what we need to do. I'm doing my part, as Starship Troopers would say. So we could ramble about this forever. The Wheel of Time season three, first three episodes drop tonight at midnight Pacific time. And then there are one a week after that every Thursday, also at midnight Pacific time. We will be covering this season extensively. So definitely come to winteriscoming.net, winteriscoming.com. Or our YouTube channel, where you may even be watching this video, and like and subscribe, because we'll be talking about it a lot over the next 2 months. But Dan, we've talked about the Wheel of Time for like a solid 30 minutes straight. There's other stuff going on this week, right? In the fantasy and sci-fi
we'll just
worlds?
Blast through some stuff really quickly. They are going to start filming the third season of House of the Dragon in this month, so like a couple of weeks.
That's
the
exciting.
Showrunner Ryan Condal is saying season two is huge. Season three is huger in many ways. There are, by my count, on stage, four major events from the book, Fire and Blood, that we get to adapt and realize in three dimensions in this season. That's really exciting on a scope and scale perspective, and I think it's the thing the show does really well. The things that we're building are mind-boggling. Four major events, they've got to be...
What? Yeah, let's talk about that.
They've got to... Well, God...
Gullet,
this show has
obviously.
Also run into big problems because of the limits on the episodes. Because two of the major events are things that probably should have happened on the second season, which are the Gullet and Taking of King's Landing by Rhaenyra. The other two...
Those are the two we know for sure. Gotta
like,
happen.
That's two out of the four. And then the other two... I'm not sure. Maybe like the Battle by the Lakeshore... The battle where Kristen Cole has something important happen to him. And then the first battle of Tumbleton, they built a set for it.
Yeah.
But again, those aren't great, like, climactic scenes. This show, man, it was so clear the second season had, like, more to do and that they pushed a major event into the third season. I hope they can structurally sort of find a way to structure it so it works.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. So I saw that and I was like, ooh, cool. Four major events. And my next thought, and like, I feel bad because like I really liked, especially the first season of House of the Dragon. Yeah. I thought season two had some real standout episodes and I enjoyed it, but the finale was a massive letdown. The four major event thing just made me think, oh God, they're doing one more season after this, and there are so many major events left to cover in this story.
How they would do that? Either they're going to give it another season, or they're just going to cut a ton.
Yeah, like I'll be honest. So when they first said, excuse me, they were doing four seasons, I wondered if we would see the battle over the God's Eye late in season three. I don't think we needed it in season three, but like thinking of the way George R. Martin structured the dance, that like if you were to just beat by beat put it on a piece of paper, that's kind of where it would fall. Now I think they're probably going to do that in season four because
there's
of
no
just
way they wouldn't.
Because of just where we're at with this story, which having that in season four along with the fates of a few other very major characters, it's like that's too much for the final season. I wonder if he's not counting the taking of King's Landing as one of those, because that is kind of a bloodless thing where the dragons fly overhead and then they're like, here, have our city, basically. So they could do that in a smaller way. But yeah, I think House of the Dragon, I'm excited, but it's kind of worked itself into a corner. I'm nervous.
I mean, again, we're talking about like Wheel of Time, House of the Dragon, things that are partially not really their fault. Like they wanted to do more and they got their episodes tossed out at the end. Like HBO said, for whatever reason, budget strikes, like we're going to have to take some of this and put it into the beginning of season three. Like that's executives matter at this level. Stuff matters. But we'll see what happens when it happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to say really quickly also, it'll be a conceptual episode, whatever that means. I'm going to guess some kind of bodily character thing.
Yeah.
It does, yes.
Makes me think
so
of
far
Damon.
They're, yeah, I know, right? The like when they've gone out of the box, it's been, what if we have Damon sleep with his mom in his dream, which I don't think anybody wanted to see.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. I mean, hopefully it just means like a bottle thing where characters just talk to each other. That's fine. They could do that.
Yeah.
There's no reason a conceptual episode can't work. Just I hope they don't.
I mean, the Wheel of Time's making it work.
Man,
it clearly
we're really
can.
Down on this.
Well, it's hard. I think so. What Leo says in the chat, I hope season three restores faith and they've learned from past mistakes. Me too, because like I want to be, like Dan said at the start of this, I'm a lover, not a hater when it comes to my media. I don't really want to be hating on House of the Dragon, but I think we, along with so many other fans, kind of felt a little bitter about it after season two. So House of the Dragon, it kind of has something to prove this season. It has to win some faith back, because at this point I see things like a conceptual episode and I'm like, oh God, what, like, you know, kind of indulgent idea did they think of now that they're going to do instead of like the Battle of Tumbleton or something, you know, that's the fear I get when I see that. Whereas when the Wheel of Time says we're doing a conceptual episode like Ruidian, I'm like, hell yeah. So yeah, we'll see. Yeah,
they've smashed it. Also, the last was on Frank's side. Sure. Says Ben Jack. Love that. That's true. Conceptual episode's going to be great.
That's a great episode. That's a great example.
Frank. The best one, the best episode so far. Best episode of the 2020s. Also, they did the table read, and here's Tom Glenn Carney, who plays Aegon, powering through his season with the power of potassium.
Yeah, very healthy, that Tom Glenn Carney.
Yeah, got to keep trim for TV.
It's true.
A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the Game of Thrones prequel is coming this year, is also on the way. Francisca Orsi, who's an HBO executive, talking about how they're making it for under $10 million an episode, which is
peanuts
at this point. Yeah, that's the point we're at in TV between Game of Thrones and Stranger Things and the Rings of Power, is that under $10 million an episode is peanuts. which back in the day, like 20 years ago, it would have been a crazy amount.
Yeah.
But I said it before and I'll say it again. I do think some kind of correction might be a really good, refreshing idea. Just a little smaller scale and a little more intimate for not quite as much crazy money. Could be a really good thing. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that show a lot. And George R. R. Martin was talking about basically saying that they're already working on a second season, which is true. They're laying the foundation. I don't know if that means that they're actually going to 100% do it. Although, again, because it doesn't cost as much, it's probably going to be great. I'm not really afraid for that one.
Yeah, same. I think Francesca Orsi's comments about how they're doing A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the battle sequences the directors achieved match those across Game of Thrones and are a fraction of the price, which I'm sure is false, to be fair, Francesca. Like, I'm sure they're good, but like, we're talking about like 14 people duking it out at a joust. We're not talking
maybe
about
maybe she means
armies.
In terms of emotional intensity. Yeah.
Yes, which I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're well filmed and whatever, but obviously they don't need 500 extras to film any of that. But yeah, it does sound like Duncan Egg, the price tag combined with maybe what they've already seen. I agree with you. I'm not worried. I would be shocked if they didn't renew Duncan Egg just based on even without it being out. Like, it'd have to really bomb for them to not renew it because of how cheap it is compared to cheap in $2025 some of their other shows. But yeah.
Also, briefly, George R. R. Martin gave a perfunctory update we've all heard before about The Winds of Winter, saying the books are what it was a pretty cool talk, talking about adaptations. He made waves last year for criticizing House of the Dragon for some adaptation choices, and basically just talking about the books are my own thing. I don't want to do with the books. And I think the one I'm writing is coming along pretty well, but I wish it would come faster. Yeah. I don't know what to say to that except, like, yeah, duh. Here he is appearing with Robert Redford as a chess-playing prisoner in Dark Winds, a show that I really should start watching because everyone seems to love it, and now it's on its third season and kind of rolling along. So if anybody's seen Dark Winds, is it worth watching? I hear it's great. And also opening a medieval-themed cocktail bar in his hometown of Santa Fe called Milk of the Poppy, which sounds like a place I would go to. And I just want to, the one thing I want to say about that is I know he gets criticized for, why aren't you writing The Winds of Winter? And like, fine. But these are all things in like his hometown. Dark Winds films in Santa Fe. He already owns the theater next to the cocktail bar. He can put his money into it. I actually think George R. R. Martin is a person who gets a lot of money and does sort of the right thing with it, which is use it to support things in their town rather than just buy tons of properties as investment things you don't use or dump it onto the stock market. Like, this is a man who got crazy rich and actually does put his money back into the community, buying a railroad, doing the Meow Wolf art installation stuff, buying a theater, buying a bookstore, investing in a cocktail bar. I wish more crazy rich people would actually do this kind of thing.
I totally agree with that. I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but the one time I went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, I was really surprised that like their local magazine of like what's going on around Santa Fe that they had in restaurants, it had George on the cover, and it was basically all about how grateful they are as a community that he's such an active philanthropist, investing back into Santa Fe and the arts industry there. I totally agree with you. Like, people get bent out of shape. I think a lot of people in Santa Fe love the fact that he does this because
they would have to. He's like making businesses left and right.
He really is. And like, in terms of their film industry, I'm sure like it has been gradually getting better and better in that region. And like, I'm sure he's not a small part of that. I didn't realize, so Milk of the Poppy, you said that's next to the movie theater?
It's on the same block. It's like the movie theater, the bookstore, and that's now fun. This cocktail bar. He's just buying a block and making fun little businesses there.
That's so fun. Yeah, Beastly Books is next to it too. And that he has like all signed books there you can order and stuff. But that is funny. Like, you know, in a few years, it'll be like the George R. R. Martin Lane or whatever. And it's just all his businesses. But yeah, love it. I'd go to Milk of the Poppy. I hope it's up and running whenever I next find myself in Santa Fe. Who knows when that will be.
Yeah, I'll just say it again before we move on. Yeah, we're having a complicated reckoning right now in this country with the power of the super rich. I don't think George Armani is quite in their league, but if you have money, I'd much prefer you do this than, yes, I don't know, buy the U.S. government and then dismantle it, for example.
Yeah.
But that can be the discussion of the day.
Yeah, and it's worth noting the movie theater, the Jean Cocteau that he owns, part of the reason he bought that was because he loved that movie theater and it closed. So it was like reviving an art installation of Santa Fe. He also like invested in a wolf sanctuary. Like there are all these things this dude's done. So yeah, I agree. The world needs less rich people. I don't care to talk about. Yes, it needs less of those and it needs more George R. R. Martins, I think is the takeaway here. But Dan, we should probably talk about some other stuff we've been watching, right?
We're running time.
This is a packed week.
We did miss last week. Sorry about that. We had technical difficulties.
The power was out in my town. Sorry, everyone. The whole town was out for like 4 hours.
Yeah, I'm watching a lot. Invincible has been a little up and down this season, but this last episode and this next, the finale, bad ass. They saved all the good stuff and the money for these last two. It's pretty clear now that I've seen the whole thing, and they really go hard.
Cool.
Ooh, people are gonna love the one that airs tomorrow. What else did I watch? Severance. That is picking up steam. They've had some really big swings and some really big hits lately. I've seen the new one that airs tomorrow. It is very clearly a set up the finale episode, but it's still compelling. Gets back to like the kind of fundamentals and nuts and bolts. Why you don't like that?
I gotta be honest. I've been enjoying Severance, but less than I expected. I think I liked the Gemma episode.
Yeah,
the last one was a Harmony Cobell episode, and I think having two back to back kind of episodes on one character in one place, I didn't love that pacing wise. And I felt like the Cobell one, I like the big reveal there at the end about her place in the Lumen Severance industrial complex. But I felt like some of the dialogue was like almost too cryptic, where it's like, I need to go to Sissy. I don't know what you mean. Like it was a lot of cryptic back and forth that it didn't quite land for me. So I'm waiting for Severance to get back to what it does really well, which is the office mind bending shenanigans. So I'm hopeful it'll do that in the last two, maybe.
This is it. I mean, like it says at the finale, but we're back at the office. We're back at the normal characters. We're back to the normal stuff. It's just, you know, it's a finale tee up episode, but it's very much, I agree with you. They've been doing a lot of, different kind of experimental things this season. This is not an experimental episode. Okay. It is an episode that leads into the finale pretty clearly.
Cool. And I like some of the experimental ones. The Gemma one especially I thought was great.
Oh, wonderful.
The Cobell one, have you been watching, or wait, you've been watching screeners, so I don't know if you've even seen these. After the episodes, they have these like Ben Stiller and the writer explain what's going on in Severance. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any of those?
No.
So the last one for the Harmony Cobell one, that whole episode was so, so cryptic. And like you had to read into it. And I liked it sometimes. Other times I was like, man, you needed to just blatantly say an extra thing or two. The writer after the episode summed up what the episode was about in like two sentences. And I was like, you just told me more about what was happening in that episode than the entire episode told me. He talked about like the brain drain on the town and stuff. And I was like, you did not make that very clear in the episode. What you're saying, it reminded me of Danny kind of forgot about the Iron Fleet is kind of the vibe of those things. But cool. I'm excited that you said the next one is good. And then obviously the finale is next week.
I enjoyed the Harmony one. I mean, it was different, but I liked that it was short. And I think I picked it up. I wonder if it just went over your head because you're not that bright.
That there's always that possibility, Dan. I'm not saying I didn't understand what was going on in the episode. I just don't think they executed it as well as they could have. I think evidence for it is in the episodes around it, because I did not feel that way about like the Gemma one or some of the others. But the Harmony one specifically, I don't know. I liked some parts of it, but what's Who said it in the chat? Zach. Being away from the core four for two episodes hurt it. That's really my biggest takeaway. I do agree that the Gem episode was beautifully done, Emmy worthy. That episode was directed by their cinematographer, and I thought the cinema
was so pretty,
so good. Yeah, I thought that you really could see the vision with the shots and the direction in that one, where I think it, at least in the terms of the visual style, it's probably the strongest episode since the premiere for me, with that big crazy scene of Mark running down the hallway. But yeah, so Severance,
I get it, and I agree with you. I watched Daredevil, and that's
it's
good. You know, it's cool. Okay, did you know, we can't talk too long because we gotta wrap things up, but
do we?
I'm just going to spoil it. In the premiere, the episode last week, the one that started, they bring back, I'm not sure if you know this, and if you don't, I'm sorry. They bring back Foggy and Karen, like the two kind of law partners.
Wait, I don't know this. Spoilers for, you can tell me, but spoilers, dip out if you don't want Daredevil spoilers. But I am curious because I haven't been watching, and I'm not gunning to watch. So
yeah, I don't think it's fine. But they bring them back for a really nice scene and then immediately write them out completely, more or less completely. So that was, I'm not kidding at all. So that was more or less a fake out. Disney just did not want them around. I'm not really sure why.
That's a shame. That's such a missed opportunity. Like, unless they're scheduling stuff that they couldn't make work or whatever. What a missed opportunity.
What are they doing? I think Disney just did not want those characters in there. It's my theory, because I know the original conception for the show, they weren't in it at all. And then the new guys, like, we have to at least acknowledge them.
Yeah.
So they are. And I really liked their scene. And it just, I won't say how, but they get written out like very quickly. And now it's just, now we got the real show.
Wow. So let me ask you then, because I did watch all three seasons of Daredevil on Netflix. I enjoyed them. It was a different era of superhero TV.
It was.
Where it was actually really good TV. Just in general, that you didn't need to have watched a bajillion other things to understand. It had to be compelling on its own. And Daredevil was compelling on its own for the most part. Do you think this is worth watching for someone like me who enjoyed the previous seasons and has been embittered toward Marvel, because I'm really kind of on the outs with Marvel. I'll rewatch Wheel of Time 10 times before I'm watching the next Marvel thing at this point.
I'm liking it. I mean, I watched it last night answering emails, so I guess I'm not horribly compelled, but it's decent.
Okay. It's
people decent. Get shot in the head, which is new for a Marvel show.
Okay. I feel like they tried to oversell the violence to the degree
they definitely
where I'm like,
did.
Yeah,
the guy ahead of it was like, this is the most hardcore, violent, bloody, disgusting you'll ever see in your entire life. We should be rated quadruple X. No one should be allowed near this. It should be banned in half the countries in the world. We're going to blow your minds. We're going to come to your house and kick your heads in.
But is it good?
Like, good Lord. It's good.
But is it good?
It's not bad.
Okay. Okay, fair. Yeah, I totally feel you. I heard the violence things too, and I was like, the original show was violent, but people didn't love it just because it was violent. It was also because it was a good, well-made show that did some really interesting things. But yeah, okay. So Daredevil Born Again, it sounds like, is okay, is decent. The jury's out maybe on whether it's the home run Marvel was hoping it would be. What else have you been watching, Dan?
It's funny. And I liked Mickey 17, the side cool. from Bong Joon-ho, Robert Pattinson. Yeah, man, it is so rare to just see a completely original, fairly big budget kind of sci-fi drama that I didn't really know where it was going. So I just got to enjoy it from start to finish, being kind of a clean slate.
Yeah,
I was brought along the entire way. I was surprised. It was cute. Cool. It was funny. It was dramatic. The performances are good. Mark Ruffalo is a Trump impression. There are big, sentient, cuddly, fearsome slug creature aliens that are fun. And Robert Pattinson's great. I liked it a lot.
Cool. You do know it's based on a book, right?
I don't care.
That's fair. Yeah, Mickey 7 is the book by Edward Ashton. I've heard the movie's very, very different, but obviously still really, it's Bong Joon-ho. It's going to be good and cool and interesting and very original in how he tells it.
Conscious.
Yeah. So The other things I have been watching, I need to mention In the Lost Lands, because I wasn't here last week because the power went out. It's very much, it's just okay. It's not very good. I feel bad because it's adapting a George R. R. Martin short story. I would not write home about it. Watch it on streaming, probably. It's a Mila Jovovich and Dave Bautista. She's a witch. He's a hunter. She leads her out into this post-apocalyptic Lost Lands place. I think the thing that baffled me the most about it is that Martin's short story is only like 17 pages long, and it's his first, one of his first real works of fantasy that was published. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a witch. Like, there are kingdoms. There's a paladin in it. Like, it's not trying to be sci-fi, and the movie's like post-apocalyptic type of sci-fi almost. And like, sure. It's just a little weird. His short story is excellent. And it ends in a very, very dark way. The movie lightened it up a little bit at the ending. So, it happened is what I will say. Didn't love it.
Should we move on to, like, you got any more?
Mythic Quest, still watching. Oh, yeah. Still enjoying. Haven't seen the most recent episode, but I love that show. It's one of my fun time shows.
I watched the first season. You're right. It's good.
Nice. So you saw the pandemic episode, right?
Yes, I did.
I thought that was a really incredibly done pandemic episode. They filmed the whole thing over Zoom. The way they talked about how they filmed that thing, it was basically like they needed a way to get people back to work during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. They were filming season two. They shut down. So they filmed that episode and then plugged it into season one. And they did it all with like iPhones at their house.
It was very clever.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have been like more bowled over if I had watched it during the pandemic.
Sure.
But I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about like the, like kind of the standalone episode where the two people make the game company.
That was an interesting one too.
Yeah. That was also great. Good. Yeah. I had to warm up for it a bit. I wasn't like, thrilled in the first few episodes. I thought it was a little milquetoast, and then it grew on me, and then the characters really sharpened up and started to laugh more. So yeah, that one grew me as I watched the first season.
Yeah, totally. I love Poppy. I don't know the actress's name, but she I've never seen her in anything else. I don't know that she's been in anything else really, but I think she's like one of the show's secret weapons. I could watch her act on that show all day.
Oh, not secret. She's up there in the front.
Yeah, true. But yeah, who? It is 3:58. I'm sure producer Richard has other things to do, so maybe we should lightning round? What do you think?
Really, really fast. We're going to go over some stories. We don't have to get the name out of the show and give our 20-second opinions.
Wow, more that or was less. So fast. Thank so you. Fast.
All right, lightning round. Daniel, Sadie Sink of Stranger Things fame is joining Tom Holland in the next Spider-Man movie. Who's she playing? Mystery.
Yeah, I like Sadie Sink for a new Spider-Man movie. I can't help but notice she's a redhead who looks like Mary Jane Watson from the comics. And I kind of wonder if they're just going to, now that Zendaya's Michelle Jones doesn't remember Spider-Man, if he's going to meet Mary Jane, the other MJ, and it will be played by Sadie Sink. I don't put anything past Marvel at this point. Dan, here's a fun one. I don't know if this is confirmed or it's just highly rumored, but apparently
it's near confirmed.
It is on the cusp of confirmation that Janet McTeer will play Professor McGonagall in the new Harry Potter show, and Papa Asayidu is playing Snape. How do you feel?
The big news is, like, we're getting almost confirmations about the Harry Potter show after John Lithgow's playing Dumbledore. It's happening. It's going forward. It's happening. This is real. It's happening. There was a lot of backlash because Papa Asayidu was black and he's playing Snape. And it's like, but Snape's white. Why can't Adam Driver play him? Which is annoying and silly. But it's happening. For better or worse. Daniel. Oh, I'm so glad you're answering this one.
Are you?
Yeah. You want me to switch?
No, that's fine. Hit me with it.
Greta Gerwig, the director of Barbie, wants pop superstar Charlie XCX to be in her Chronicles of Narnia movie she's making for Netflix.
I will not lie. I cannot think of a single Charlie XCX song off the top of my head.
Clap sound in my heart. The beat
oh, yeah. Na, okay, na, na, that na, one. Na, na, yeah. British singer-songwriter. I assume she wants her to be the White Witch or something. because what other roles for adult women are there in Narnia? Everyone else is a fawn or some kind. They're all either creatures or children. That's the one role. So yeah, in Greta Gerwig, we trust. All right. Here's a fun one. So apparently George Lucas proposed making a Star Wars TV show, and it would have cost $40 million per episode. Here's the kicker. Into the early 2000s, so pre-Game of Thrones.
To be fair, people were a lot more... Star Wars had a lot more mystique back then, but $40 million in the early 2000s? Like, what is that even today? Like, 100? 80? That would have been nuts. No, never is going to happen. It's going to be about like the underworld or something of Star Wars, whatever.
Ooh. Give me a Coruscant crime drama.
Yeah.
Crime families on Coruscant. Okay. I'm here for
this. This one is more your speed.
Yes.
Avatar 3, the new one, Fire and Ash, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Is the longest of the Avatar movies yet, and it made James Cameron's wife bawl uncontrollably after she watched it.
I think neither of those things surprise me over much, because, yeah, so apparently it's going to be 3 hours and 12 minutes, which that feels pretty average for, like, the Avatar extended cut is around that length too. So sure. Like, I think it fits. It's okay. It's on brand. And yeah, of course it brought James Cameron's wife to tears because she's supportive and she wouldn't tell him if it didn't. All right. Dan, here is a fun one. And sorry you missed us, Julie. We did have daylight savings here in the U.S. So we
switched back. We did this stupid thing in the U.S. We change our times twice a year. Never mind. It's a whole thing.
It's dumb. We all hate it. But John Wick does not hate it because he is dead. However, John Wick 5 as a movie is still moving forward with dead John Wick, who may or may not be in it because he's dead.
Yeah, how do you make a movie with the main character who died in the last movie? I don't know. You take John Wick's body to a witch doctor and you have them resurrect him, and then he has to fight his way out of a mausoleum full of zombies. I did it.
I'd watch that.
John Wick 5. All right, Daniel.
Yes.
The trailer for The Last of Us Season 2 got 158 million views in 3 days, breaking a record for HBO and Max.
Wow, that's a lot of views. That trailer, which there's a new trailer for The Last of Us, go watch it. It is pretty awesome. So I'm not surprised that people are hyped. I know we're gushing about the Wheel of Time. The Last of Us is going to be probably the next really huge show of the year after Wheel of Time. It premieres, I think, April 17th, right? April
sure.
Something-eth? 14th. The same week as the Watt finale. And yeah, it's going to be epic. Dan, here's one for you about Hideo Kojima, the world's coolest dude, who is always, he's always posting cool photos on his social media of him doing cool stuff because he's Hideo Kojima and he can. So a movie based on Hideo Kojima's video game Death Stranding is apparently in the works.
Yeah, Death Stranding is a game where Norman Reedus carries boxes across a sci-fi landscape. Okay. And that will be a movie because Hideo Kojima is a video game developer who famously loves movies more than he loves life or games or anything. That's a prize. I guess they have to cast Norman Reedus. Who else could they possibly do?
that's I want to sit on those discussions. Do you cast Norman Reedus? Who do we cast to play Norman Reedus?
If they don't, it is it is a direct middle finger to him.
Yes.
But that'll be then. This is now. Julie, I'm sorry for condescending and assuming that the entire world didn't have some kind of version of daylight savings time. I'm an American. I don't look beyond the borders of my own country.
To be fair, our colleague in, I believe, Ireland told us he does not have it. So
he doesn't?
No. So we had reasons for assuming this. It wasn't just thinking we're the only ones who have this stupid ass tradition.
You gotta get rid of this stuff. But we're an hour earlier for some parts of the world. Everybody, thanks for sticking with us today. This is a long one. Wheel of Time Season 3 debuts tonight. Woo! Check out winterscoming.com.net for all of your fantasy, sci-fi, movie book, TV needs. Subscribe to us here on the YouTube channel, the Facebook channel. Give us a like, a subscribe. Tell your friends, tell your children, tell your parents, tell your parole officers. Just get everybody watching who can get watching, because we like attention. We'll be here doing another live show at 2 p.m. CST next Wednesday and every Wednesday from here until the end of eternity. Thanks a lot for watching. Have a great day and goodbye.
Take care, all. Happy Watt Week.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.